What's going on, everybody? Welcome, welcome, welcome to another micro episode of Flame On with your co-host, Brian.
Hey, and who are you?
BJ. I am I just forgot. The co-host.
it's been a long week.
We partner up. So we are back again, this time for special number three of Doctor Who, the penultimate episode of the 60th anniversary. We are recording this on the 14th of December. So in just a couple of weeks, about 2 weeks, we will have our Christmas special with Shurigatwa, our new doctor. So
you're counting the Christmas special as the, like, as part of the 60th then?
I'm not. I thought the 60th were the three episodes. I thought, yeah, special three was the penultimate of the 60th penultimate anniversary.
Is the one before the ultimate, which is the last one. So technically, Wild Blue Yonder is penultimate, unless I've totally been doing that wrong. But I think I'm right, as always. So yell at me in the comments. Have we gotten any comments lately? Actually, have these episodes even gone out yet? I don't think they've gone out. I think you're going to see in the feed over the next, like, you know, basically after the Christmas special, between then and the new series, you'll get these at some point.
I know the first one did, because we got our little critique of it's Russell T. Davies,
still open on that. Still, you know, but again, if you haven't heard the last episode, you know we put out a challenge to show proof that you are correct. So do your work. That's what I'm saying.
You hear that, listeners? Do your work.
Yep.
Not how do can your we worst. Be successful?
I'm not daring you. I'm just saying I need primary sources. I need an interview just to remind people. Maybe they skipped the Wobbly Yonder one because they were like, eh, it's okay. It's not my favorite. It doesn't look that interesting. You have to show Russell saying his name or somebody like close to him saying his name and him not correcting them, like, you know, you might do. So just saying.
I hope you realize this means if I make it to a convention and Catherine Tate or anybody from the show is there, I'm asked, that's the question I'm going to walk up and ask that question. I'm not going to ask any like type of deep, meaningful question. I'll be like, how do you pronounce Russell T. Davies' last name? Is it Davies or Davis?
I mean, this is the ultimate question in the universe. Like, this is more whatever than the name of the doctor. I mean, it's huge. Like, we got to know. Actually, that's not true. I'm sorry, Moffat. That was totally not. I'm out of line here. I gotta remember my place. I worship at the church of Stephen Moffat, and that's how you say his name. By the way, it's Moffat, not great Satan, as I think some like to do. He who cannot write women.
I mean, he can introduce them well. Like, he can introduce female characters perfectly. It's the landing that he mm-hmm. I think River Song's the only one he kind of stuck the landing with. Because
Disagreeing that he stuck the landing with Russell. Oh my God. I'm not disagreeing that he stuck the landing with River Song. I would beg to differ that he did not stick the landing with others. But actually, relevant to this episode we're about to talk about, there may or may not have been a little shade thrown across the showrunners in this episode.
Yes. Yes.
So we'll get to that.
Starting at the very beginning, which is a very good place to start. Oh, God. Now the song's running through my head.
Thank you for that. And listener, you're welcome. You've just been not Rickrolled, but I don't even know. Sound of Music rolled. Julie rolled.
Julie rolled.
I like that.
Julie rolled.
Yeah.
We'll go a little bit more traditional on this episode. What is some of the stuff that you really liked for this episode? Cause there was a lot happened here. Holy crap.
All right. I don't want to take all of them and I'm doing one, okay. But I'm doing the one that delighted me the most. Are you ready?
All right.
Listeners, by generation, baby, by generation, that one thing, like the episode's great. Totally not no notes, but like few notes. By generation was such a shock, such a delight, such a cop out in so many ways. but also such a redux of the end of, what was it, Doomsday? Was that when the Doctor went off and he had a clone and the clone went
kind
to hang out with Rose?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, you're right, actually.
Who wrote that? Russell T. Davis. Russell.
Davies.
Sure. So I love Bygeneration. This is unprecedented. And I know this is totally out of order, but you asked my favorite. Doctor Who passes the torch. He doesn't split and run the marathon. Well, I guess in this case, he splits. One of the halves runs the marathon to completion or whatever, or to the next guy or next person. And then the other one goes and like retires in France with a friend of his family. I mean,
that moment was so great, especially when they actually, I'm so glad they left in like a moment where they all just kind of chatted and talked. And the whole thing with him being like, we're Time Lords, we're doing rehab out of order, because he was like, I'm fine. And he's like, I'm fine because you fixed yourself. You took a breath. And I love that, where you essentially have David Tennant is now trauma doctor. he's the doctor holding all the trauma, and he's taking a break. And I love that, because it kind of, it gives him a happy ending, question mark. But it also, just the way Shuti's doctor, like, you know, was very delicate with him and cradled him and was like, when you think about it, it's if you had a chance to talk to yourself, like, how honest would you be? And also, how gentle would you be with yourself, knowing you're being extraordinarily rough on yourself? And he knows what he needs, and he knows he can't make him get what he needs. All he can do is tell him. But the thing is, then you have Donna there, and Donna comes in and is like, I mean, I'm usually right in these situations. And in a very Donna way, she's like, I've been telling you these things.
This for the last day that we've been hanging out together again. It's a long day, but it's been a day. So, no, and it's funny you say that, because I don't think I thought about the whole this is therapy, do therapy out of order or whatever, because in my head, and I don't know that I entirely, there's a lot to unpack on this, so we're gonna dwell for a bit. The Shuti's 15th isn't a, so this is what confuses me most. It's not a branched timeline where you have both doctors off in their own little mini timelines, although it is in a way of speaking. But because they bigenerate and they're there together and they're hanging out, which, by the way, the doctors have interacted before. I mean, you don't even have to go very far back. The 50th anniversary, actually, mm-hmm. You don't have to go that far back. The regeneration of Capaldi's doctor into Jodie Whittaker's doctor.
Oh, yeah.
He goes and hangs out with the first doctor. Like, mm-hmm. Doctor Who has long done this thing where they will run into each other, right? But it's at the end or some points in their timeline when that would make sense. What's new here isn't that. It's that one doctor didn't die. The 14th doctor's timeline isn't over. It's going to keep on running in parallel, in real time, or sort of, so to speak, with Shuti's, the 15th doctor. So it's interesting, because now I'm thinking what you said and what they said and what Shuti said in the show. It's almost like, okay, well, because you're taking this break, Shuti's doctor telling Tennant's doctor, because you're doing this, I am okay. But at the end of the 14th, oh my God, I'm so far down a rabbit hole, right? I'm sorry. The end of the 14th doctor's life, what happens? Does he regenerate into Shuti and there's now two of them? Like, I have questions. And so I don't, and by the way, Doctor Who is not something you really should do this with, because it is all turtles all the way down. It's a house of turtle cards. You pull one and the whole thing collapses. So please understand that I am not at all very serious about this. But in a little way, I am, because it's like, huh? Like, how does that work? It doesn't matter. I think the takeaway is Tenet needs some rest, right? I mean, that's the case they've been building. That's why he chose his old face. Obviously, the flux, which they've definitely used that flux situation in a very good way here, showing trauma. And I do appreciate that Russell Davis, what, you know, whatever. He knows about trauma. He is writing about how people deal with trauma, and he is doing it from a place of direct knowledge. That man has had trauma in his life. Most recently, but he lost his husband of like 10 plus years, only a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And that is catastrophic for any person to lose a partner, a spouse, or whatever. I mean, that is such trauma. Plus then the pandemic is trauma. Like, so there's so much trauma he's probably talking about and processing. And in some ways, the Doctor Who franchise has had trauma in its history of just this production issue, this producer issue, this actor issue. I mean, in some ways, it's like a meta commentary on the Doctor Who. Sorry, my computer's decided to beep at me. The Doctor Who franchise having all this trauma. And so it is both a cop-out. It is both a redux on the whole. And you get a doctor. Everybody gets a doctor. But also a way to say, listen, you need to deal with your shit. Old doctors, Doctor Who, the past. Shooty represents something that is now moving forward. It's a new thing. He is invigorated might be a word. I don't know. I just made it up. But like, he's renewed and he has an emotional maturity that the Doctor does not typically demonstrate, even if maybe they have it. I mean, Jodie's Doctor a little bit more, but like, Shooty comes out of the gate so nurturing, so queer coded. We'll talk about that too, but just so great and so loving and tender with Tenet. And that's all that matters. By generation, you can pick it apart. Like I just did a little bit ago. You can think it's ridiculous. Whatever reactions people are having, I'm sure they're having kittens about this, but at the end of the day, it's about trauma. It's about healing from trauma. It's about knowing when to take a break. And in our culture, that's something that's also relevant. People are hitting walls with their own traumas and taking breaks, whether it's quiet quitting or turning down certain things or whatever they're doing, going back to school, doing whatever. Like people are dealing with trauma in their own ways, and it's all relevant to what we're going through as a society now. So I love that. Thank you, Russell. I appreciate this moment. It was delightful and shocking. It made me cry. It made me laugh. All of the things. So yes, that's my generation, baby.
Well, it's so funny too, because like, and now I'm going to go through my overanalyzing thing. So yes, you are correct. Their timelines are aligned until he leaves. Then he's out of that specific timeline and running off and doing whatever he wants. So it's kind of like finishing, and that's why I love that line where we're Time Lords, we're doing rehab out of order. And I do love like he comes out joyful, like super excited. And that was the thing I loved about Jodie, because Kirpaldi's Doctor wasn't going to regenerate. He was done. And he was over it, and he essentially gave himself another chance to experience joy. And that's what I loved about Jodie's, is because Jodie's comes out the gate super excited, super nerdy, loves like using slang in like the wrong way, just like until she runs into something that just is abhors life. She was super excited and super happy just to like experience something new. And so I love that Shooty's kind of brought in a similar feel with the like especially when he's saying goodbye and he's just like, all right, kid, I love you. Get out. and I love that, because if you think about it in the terms, he remembers. At some point, he remembers being stationary and taking his time and recovering, which explains why now he's ready to go. Like, he's ready to run off. That was a wonderful moment. But one of my top things for the episode has got to be Neil Patrick Harris as the Toymaker.
Of course.
Because he chewed that up. Every single scene he's in, I love the switching up of the accents and how he like, and he's so playfully mean, like that whole scene with the puppet show. And he's going through all the companions, and the doctor is essentially just like, where he goes through Amy Pond, and he's like, she actually died of old age. And he's like, well, that's all right then. And it's just like how he keeps going and going and going and goads the doctor into playing a game. Just like, and then of course the Spice Up Your Life number, like, cause personally, that is my favorite Spice Girls song. I feel it's underappreciated. Absolutely, I don't hear it enough, and it was absolutely hilarious, very creepy, especially it. We, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the scene of Everything Everywhere All at Once, when the main antagonist shows up and starts warping reality randomly.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a very like, it's gleeful, but it's also like when he turns the guys into balls, and.
Oh.
And Kate's like, what happened to them? And he's like, they're dead. I'm so sorry. Like, just the fact that he can just, if he touches anybody, they could die.
Well,
like,
and the scientist person whose name I should probably know by now, but like holds up the ball and you see the face of the soldier in it. So obviously the balls are sentient.
And, oh, that's like, Shirley Bingham.
Shirley, thank you. And like, just like, that's horrifying. Do you know what that whole number reminded me of? And yeah, Everything Everywhere All at Once makes sense. It's got that same kind of tone, but it's the master when he's dancing around to the Rogue Traders Voodoo Baby.
I thought it was he was dancing to I don't know.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Whether no, you should live or die by Scissor Sisters.
Yeah, you're right. They use the other song for the Toclofane when they fly out.
Here come the drums. Right.
No, it was Scissor Sisters. I can't decide. Yeah, that one. But so, and again, that's another Russell, you know, number. So like, again, Russell has these things that like, and I appreciate his tropes. I appreciate his moments where he takes a villain and gives them this fantastic dance number. I want to say Neil Patrick Harris has always been somebody, even back from Doogie Howser, that I was like, oh yeah, no, he's pretty cool. And then in the last 10 years, pretty much since he came out, you know, he had announced his husband and the kids, and he has all of these different interests that he's very public about, including magic. He's been on Broadway. I mean, this role could not have been played by many people in there because, I mean, he did the dancing. He did the other choreo stuff. He did the accents. He did the card tricks, the sleight of hand. In one of the behind the scenes videos, he was going to do the puppetry himself, and then they did insert shots with actual like puppeteers who, you know, built puppets just to make it really clear. But like, he is a polyglot, I guess is the term. Like, he just does all of the things. Yep. And he was just so memorable. And the accents is an interesting thing, and I want to touch on the games. But the accent, part of the reason that he does this is he puts on these visages. He plays characters, right? In a kind of a way that, you know, if you're really into a sport, you kind of adapt in some small way to the sport. You pick up aspects of the culture. He goes full on into the period he's in, the game he's doing, the thing, just to really immerse himself, kind of like an actor in a role. And it's tying back to when he was a toy maker in the first Doctor's era, when he was dressed as a very horrible Chinese like sort of appropriation, but in a almost a worse. It wasn't just I'm a fan of Chinese culture, I want to look like that. No, he did a pastiche of it, you know, that was now very offensive. But I mean, that's the character. So then a somewhat callback, they're making him German, and they're making him, I mean, English is kind of his default, right? But like, they're using that as his, like, I don't know, like his part of his play, part of his stuff. But the ball thing is great because, like, what was the first game, right? Probably a ball. Sure. I mean, why not? We got nothing. We got no idea. But the tie that in as this murder, that like one of the first murders was the ball. And then the last ball is, you know, the last skull or whatever of humanity. Mm-hmm. And then tying it into the end when they play ball. I mean, this episode was written very well. There's very few moments that I felt were really weak. It was so intense and so constant and just so energetic. I was surprised they got it all done in an hour. Like, this is the kind of thing you normally would see, like a two-parter. And to be honest, I kind of wish we had more of Neil Patrick Harris over the course of all three episodes, because he is so fun. And I know that, I mean, spoilers, the doctors best him and he goes away. The good news is we know that that's not the end of the story ever. Just like the master, you know, was trapped in a golden tooth, but then some mysterious woman picks up the golden tooth. Like,
oh,
they're going to bring people back.
I'm hoping that's the, so originally, because they did that exact scene before when his ring fell off, when the doctor burned his body.
Right.
And a woman grabbed his ring and you could hear him laughing. This time, the hand grabbing the tooth, you hear all of them laughing because there was Missy was in there. The most recent one, they're like one of the old ones. All of their laughs were all their giggles were overlaying each other. And so what's funny is when they originally did that scene where a woman grabs the ring, somebody asked RTD if like who grabbed the ring. And he jokingly said the hand of the Ronnie.
So it's funny you say that, because as you're reminding me of this, although I don't remember who, did they ever show who grabbed the ring previously or no?
So yes. So originally it was the master's, technically the master's companion who played his fake wife.
Right. The wife. Okay. That's what I thought. Right. So, but the Ronnie, for those who don't know, and I really hope that he's joking, but he's not joking. The Ronnie is another Time Lord that was kind of used a few times and in the audio dramas used a lot. And she's an evil time. She's not Missy because she's not the master, but she is kind of Missy-esque. And so when Missy was announced and we didn't know, I don't think we knew her name was Missy or something. A lot of people thought that she was the Ronnie. So
yeah. And the thing is, I actually rewatched an episode of the last episode she was physically in. And that was, she's more like, so whereas the master is kind of like chaos and chaos and control. She is so science obsessed to almost like terrifying level. Like she's willing to use entire planets to experiment on. So I'd be very interested if he does make good on that. But that's what he said back then. Now we're not sure who it is.
It could play out any which way they want. But like we do know that there is this. Did they say he who waited or?
Here's kind of like the penultimate thing of why I love Neil Patrick Harris is because the Toymaker was honestly, I felt like the Toymaker was too big. He was too big and too flashy to leave running around for an entire season. What we're dealing with is a combination of the Doctor's consequences from Wild Blue Yonder, where he played the game at the edge of the universe. And brought in the Toymaker. It attracted the Toymaker into the universe. And now we've got the Toymaker having essentially been running rampant for God knows how long and just messing with everything. He said his legions are on the way. You've got He Who Waits. Something out there that was so scary, the Toymaker was too scared to mess with. And then you have like the master sealed in the tooth that's somewhere out there. So you've got all these things and RTD has announced that he said this season's going to be very, very different because there's going to be some fantasy elements sprinkled in more, not just like, so there's usually a sci-fi explanation as to why, like it's usually an alien or some kind of mutation or a science experiment. This time around, he said there's going to be actual full on fantasy elements. And if you've watched the trailer for the Christmas special, apparently it deals with goblins.
Yeah. I remember hearing him say this and I'm sitting there like, there has been fantasy in Doctor Who before. This is not new. It is true that a lot of times there's like a little teeny explanation that's like, oh, well, blah, 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 blah. That means it's this. And so it sort of explains why it's not really fantasy. It's Arthur C. Clarke. Anything significantly advanced is indistinguishable from magic, whatever. Yeah. But like fantasy has been in Doctor Who before. And so I was a little surprised he said it that. But then I watched the trailer for, like you said, the Christmas special. And I'm like, well, those are full on goblins. All right, cool. But like, they're goblins. Goblins aren't an alien race. You're telling me you're just going to flat out go, oh no, this is Mythical Goblins. Although, did you watch not just the trailer, did you watch the musical number that they released?
I did. I did watch the musical number.
Song? I don't remember what the song is.
It's about eating babies.
It's Labyrinth. Yes. Did you freaking
it's
catch
so it? Good.
It's Labyrinth. There's a goblin 100%. King. I mean, this is a little spoiler for something that hasn't come out yet, but it's on the internet. It's a goblin king, and he's talking about eating a baby, and there's a bunch of freaking goblins. One of which is very, I mean, they're goblins, so they're not like strongly gendered, but like there is a goblin moment, little aside. And this very masculine presenting goblin is like, he can eat me. He makes me swoon. And I was just about to lose my mind. So all that to say, fantasy is sure. Why not? Doctor Who can take fantasy and that's fine. I am curious to see what they do with it. And like you were saying, all of these little things that they're planting seeds for over his maybe 3 years or however long Russell wants to write. It's interesting. He's seeding it now in this moment. By having the toy maker sort of talk about the minions or legions that are coming and then all these other things and he who waits. So all of that's exciting. All of it's like total nerd bait, right? But what else about this episode? Like what do we know what we love. Was there anything like a little note, any disappointments, any little things we haven't scratched yet?
For me, I think I have to go with my complaint whenever I love something so much is that I didn't get enough. But what's funny is I got it. I honestly, this sated my David Tennant, Catherine Tate itch I've been having. A natural conclusion for Donna and like her family, and we could get radio dramas or we could get later stories about him traveling with Rose. We could actually have them come back. Like the way they leave it open is so good. But at the same time, it's that line where she's like, do you miss it? And he's like, you know, all those fights and battles and everything I fought for, he's like, it was for this. And when he looks at her and tells her he's never been more happy in his life. And he calls like they're his family, like his Rose is his niece. So like that whole thing that almost opens up. I would love to see even just some one shots, the little minisodes they do on YouTube. I would love to see just a day in the life of especially with Donna getting a job with UNIT. Like I feel like we have to see them at some point again, but it's just going to be reserved for like a special or something. But honestly, that was like a cherry on top for me. That made me really happy. Like I said, I just kind of wanted more.
Yeah.
I wanted a little bit more time. I'm super excited for the Christmas special to actually get some time with Shooty and meet the new companion, Ruby. Ruby Gold?
No, I think it's Ruby Sunday. I'll double check that. The episode's name is The Church on Ruby Road, which she was, I guess, abandoned at. So there's a bit of a mystery about his female companion. Who would write such a thing?
See, I can be fine with her being an orphan. Like, that's fine. I don't need another Clara. Yeah,
it's Ruby Sunday.
Ruby Sunday. So I'm
glad
excited.
You want more. I'm glad you want more. And I totally agree. I think this moment will give fans alone so much to play with and make their own little Dr. Rose, Dr. Mel. We haven't mentioned Mel, the companion from
the sixth Doctor era. Doctor.
Like Mel's great. Love that she gets her recognition, and seems like she's going to be a returning character, which I'm thrilled about. And I'm also like, of all the companions you picked, Mel, but also Mel, that's great. She's really fun. I think, is it Bonnie Langford? Is that her name?
I believe it is Bonnie Langford. Yes. Yeah, you're right. Melanie Bush.
She's been great. So I'm, she has a great part in this whole special too. I think, I had another little just whatever about thing that I didn't like, but Oh, you know what? Let's screw that. I don't care. It's probably gone. I love that they kept Wolf around. I thought they were going to kill him off. Instead, yeah. they're like, no, wait, no, don't do that. You don't need to kill Wolf off just because the actor died. You can say, oh, he's off shooting moles. And of course, he's like, hey, I gave the moles force fields because I love moles. And like that, and it was a vegan reference, made my boyfriend very happy because, you know, animal cruelty is not something that someone who's a vegan is very thrilled about. And that's fair and also true. So it was like, yay, nice, good representation. I know one thing. Okay, there's one thing. The end of the sort of the prize where the 15th Doctor takes out the clown hammer, which I always appreciate a good clown hammer. It hits the TARDIS and makes a copy. Okay, great. That's ridiculous, but I love it. Then he takes the door and he opens it. And actually, it wasn't Shooty who did it. It was Tennant, I think, who did it. And it is like wheelchair accessible. Like, I was like, okay, here's the thing about that. Yes, of course. Great. Love the idea. Should have been done years and millennia ago, right? But maybe don't call attention to it like the way you did, because it almost makes it a little grandstandy. And I'm not going to say the P word, because that's not what happens, but it just takes you, it can take you out of the story for a hot second. And you just go, oh, I see what you're doing there. And that's, I like that. I obviously approve of the idea of this, but just maybe reveal it in a story beat. You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think there was a better way to do that, but love the idea. Of course, obviously should have been done a long time ago. Gosh. Yeah. Oh, and also fun note, Shudigatwa spent all of what, like 15 minutes that he's in the episode in his underwear.
Yes.
Great choice. Made sense from the story. Totally made sense. Also, creepy ass puppetry in this. What's his name? Stooky Bill.
Creepy. Stooky Bill. Yeah.
Stooky's Bill's family. Holy fuck. That's creepy. And then we talked about the puppets, but yeah, basically this is the shade throwing I alluded to. The only companions they mention are Moffat's companions. Yes, thank you. It was Amy, it was Clara, and it was Bill. No mention of any of the companions from, what's his name? Chibnall's era of Jodie's.
Oh, Chibnall's. Yeah. Own Chibnall's era.
So like, but I also know that Moffat and David Russell, they're fast friends. I do not believe it was shade of a, like really like shade. It was playful shade in any way. Yeah. It was like meant to be like kind of probably a little bit of a
well, dig. And to be fair, they all got away alive and fine. I mean,
yes, this is probably part of the rib is like, listen, Moffat. Cause I think there is a joke somewhere that when was it? What's his, the Game of Thrones guy, John,
Peter Jackson, not Peter Jackson.
That guy, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy. I don't know why I can't think of it. I can picture him clear as day. From Portlandia, actually. He's in the first episode. It's ridiculous. Anyway, so yeah, he walks into a bar. Stephen Moffat and He Who Shall Not Be Named, Whedon. And everybody dies basically. So the joke is all the characters love to kill people, but which is fine, which is all part of HR, George R. R. Martin. See,
there we go.
Brain got there eventually. But yeah, no, it's playful. It's good. So yeah, I think none of the stuff was bad. There were a few moments that maybe held together by the thinnest of threads, like the whole explanation of the giggle and how it was stuck in all the screens. And that's the typical Doctor Who hand wavy. Sure, that works. Why not? Don't think about it too hard. Do appreciate any good music notation references, and especially little music being part of the clue. I do appreciate that. So mm-hmm. The fact that his giggle was a nice arpeggio, also love. But the explanation is like, all right, sure. Oh my God. I'm sorry. I'm on a roll. Stop me whatever you want. One more thing. This is the last thing I'll talk about this episode, I swear. Music, besides music's great. Social commentary. This is when RTD nails it, because his Doctor Who and his other writings, of course, as well, but his Doctor Who has such great biting social commentary. This giggle causing everybody to be convinced that they're right. And the way they depicted that and the little moments, including the Zedex that thank Kate Lethbridge Stewart, Vanessa Redgrave, I think. I might have gotten her first name wrong because she's related to the other Redgrave. But Kate.
Gemma Redgrave.
Gemma Redgrave. Vanessa Redgrave's her older sister, I think. Anyway, like, great actress, demonstrated like this rant, this Twitter.
Oh my God.
Elon Musk level rant that we see now on the, on not even the daily, on the minute, secondly. And
that
how
made
everyone
me
is
so nervous. That made me what? So nervous, because then when he's like, all right, turn it back on, and she snatches it off her arm, and I'm like, oh God, oh, please stop her. Like, Kate's been pretty consistent for a while in Doctor Who. And like, I'm like, I love her so much. I'm like, please don't let anything happen to Kate.
Oh, no, for sure. She's amazing. And Unit's awesome, and I'm glad it's back. But that social commentary was so spot on about the nonsense that we're in right now, that I was even impressed that I think it's during the Doctor's rant about humans, and they this and they that, and they cancel. Oh, sorry. No, oh, no, this was
that was the toy maker talking about how much he, how all the games he loves, yes, the human games, race the playing, games,
which I appreciate that Russell, that was a brave choice because he could get called out for it. And what's interesting is he had an actor who has also been canceled because of, Neil Patrick Harris had a Christmas party, some or Halloween party maybe. And it was the year Amy Winehouse died. And like, he had a cake made that was the body of Amy Winehouse.
Oh no, I thought it was, John Barrowman exposing him, like flashing people on
that
set.
That too. That's another good example of someone who did some stupid shit and got canceled. But like, the point is, dealing with that in this social, in this doctor, in this freaking the kids adventure sci-fi fantasy show, but with a message that's like, maybe we don't all have to be right all the time. Maybe we need to learn humility and be patient with people as they make mistakes, especially publicly. Like, gee, isn't that an interesting message to sneak into this Disney Plus aired wildly popular progressive show that, you know, is an important message. So I was very, very, very pleased the way he merges those two in this one. Doesn't always work as well. Like I said, the wheelchair thing was kind of a take you out of it for a second. Again, though, I completely am glad it's there. Though I am curious the next time, like when it actually gets used, I'm kind of wondering when that'll be. Like, they could have just had, what's her name, roll on in. Like, hey, I want to check something out. And then she rolls in. Like, yeah, that would have been show, don't tell. You know what I mean? Anyway, so all that to say, love the giggle. Great episode. I want so badly for it to be Christmas, though. That also means I'll have done a lot of shopping and I'm not and be ready for it. I'm totally not right now. So it can't just be Christmas immediately. But yeah, no, it's just I'm so thrilled Doctor Who's back. And I'm so thrilled that this amazingly queer man, Shooty, is playing an amazingly queer and in touch with his emotions doctor who dances on in a club with a kilt.
Kilt on. Oh. I'm like, I said, I love when he's explaining what he's doing with the hammer, and he's just like, we won. We get a prize, honey.
When has the doctor ever said honey? I mean, and I know people, I can hear it in my head, the people who are losing their ever living shit because of all this great, what they would think is woke agenda bullshit, whatever. Oh. Like, this is finally a moment that those of us who are queer, like Russell, who have long believed the doctor is more than just some cis, hetero, whatever, like, you know, defies the bounds of those terms completely, has been gender queer for a long, long time. That he finally gets to have this moment and share this with the community.
I was going to say, this will be the last thing I say on it. It's cleaning house. I mean, because here's the best part. Here's the delicious thing that he's done for the characters that dislike Rose just because, like, it's a trans character that's in the show. David Tennant's doctor is forever linked to her now because that's his favorite niece. Mm-hmm. So if he does ever come back, Rose will most definitely be coming back.
Yeah,
so
I did
guess
see-
what?
I know I did see somebody criticize, actually, this is interesting. I'm glad you brought this up because I did see a piece that criticized the fact that with this moment of having a black doctor, you're still like keeping like an exit strategy where you have the white doctor sticking around. So you're right. And I don't subscribe to that. It's an interesting viewpoint and that they're totally entitled to that. I don't have to be right about this for sure. But like, it was to me more important that, yes, he's got this trans niece that is very tied to the mythology of the show in so many ways, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is it is cleaning house. It is sort of really, really making it clear that this show is not for the close-minded, not for people who always have to be right, you know? So yep. Yay.
So yeah, I'm super excited. Like, I'm beyond excited. Actually, I just saw an article that just said the most powerful scene to me is the Doctor finally being kind to himself. It was like, ooh,
self-care, self-care, man. You got to take care of yourself. You gotta sometimes take a stop, go to France. Just pick up all your shit, take your best family friends and just go to France. Oh, and Mel stops by. Crazy Aunt Mel just stops by France. That's a thing that happens in Europe, in the promised land of Europe.
Well, she took a Zingo, apparently, which is like, I'm guessing some sort of space transportation service.
It sounds like something out of Douglas Adams, but I mean that fits that era of Colin Baker where everything was a very spacey sci-fi 80s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that fits.
Mad Aunt Mel. All right. Well, everybody, that is it for us. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to let us know. If you want to adhere to Brian's challenge of finding out how you pronounce RTD's last name, then please let us know. For the love of God, let us know. Feel free to send us a message on any of our socials at flameonshow.com, at flameonshow on Facebook and Instagram. So with that, allons-y.